X gon' give it to you. Wait for you to get it on your own. X gon' deliver to you. Knock, knock, open up the door, it's real. With the non-stop pop out from stainless steel.
Welcome everybody to the Inside Lacrosse MLL podcast for week 10 of the 2017 Major League Lacrosse season. I'm Kyle Devitt, the gear and lifestyle editor for Inside Lacrosse, and I am joined by
Chris Rosenthal, Inside Lacrosse freelance contributor and MLL analyst.
And we have a really exciting show for you guys. We got Will Manny coming up, but first, as always, we're going to go through the weekend update. First game, Charlotte 15, Chesapeake 14. Chris, how big of a win was this for Charlotte?
You know, I think it was huge, especially considering they had so many losses that were close, you know? And when you get those kind of demoralizing nail-biter losses, you kind of wonder if you have whatever that kind of it factor is that lets you kind of, you know, fight ahead, or if you're just kind of always going to be on the wrong side of things. So I think going into Annapolis and coming out with a big win like this is definitely something that can carry over later in the year.
What are your thoughts on Chesapeake just constantly moving guys in and out of their lineup?
I think it's scary. I don't know if they can – I don't know if they're going to be able to do something that prevents it, or if some of their guys just are kind of bogged down by – you know, off-field commitments that are going to, you know, keep them out for a long-term situation. But it's really tough to get a good read on their potential. And even more so, like, their potential doesn't really matter that much. They need results. And, you know, like, is Sean Evans going to be back next week? And if he is, who are you going to bump out? Is everybody going to be there 1 week? Or, you know, are you going to be missing some guys? Lyle Thompson apparently coming back. If he's back in there, what are they going to do? Juggling around attackmen. It seems like a really seems a situation I don't envy, juggling that sort of lineup. Who's going to be there? Who isn't? Who's playing where? A lot of questions still going on for Chesapeake, and they don't really have that kind of wiggle room right now to figure it out as they go.
Yeah, they really just need to be more consistent with the guys they roll out. Defense has been pretty good, but in terms of, you know, consistency of guys that they're actually dressing, but the offense is kind of a mess, man. Chesapeake, you know, leads the league in turnovers. They turn the ball over a ton. It's not a pretty picture for the BayHawks. But again, it's only a one goal loss, so let's not overreact to that result. Game number two. This was the Twitter game of the week. New York 13, Rochester 12. And I have a theory about this game, and I said it during the game. I think if Drew Adams wasn't playing in between the pipes for the Lizards, that this game would not have been closed. I don't care what the numbers were that he had, his save totals, they look wrong to me. It's a minuscule amount. It's like 12 saves. No way. No fudging way did he have 12 saves. He had 12 saves in like one half. Rochester had a ton of clean looks, and he saved that game for the Lizards. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, it's, you know, granted they won, but it's difficult to be in a position that hinges so much on a goalie playing well for an entire game, you know? Because, I mean, being a goalie is really, really difficult. And, you know, you shouldn't have to count on, like, a superhuman performance. And, you know, if they get one and they win, that's great. But, you know, what is that going to say if he has an average day next week, you know? Are they just flat out of luck? You know, he did have a great game, but I don't think they can, you know, rest easy just assuming that's going to keep happening.
Yeah, I don't think they really fixed the defense despite the scoreline being relatively low. On the other side of the field, a little bit of a down game for Wolf here. I only say that because he missed two point-blank shots that I've never seen him miss. He has that little turnaround move after he beats the guy from X, and he kind of faked a shoulder roll and popped it over. One of them he missed completely, and the other one Adam saved. And Wolf's head went down immediately as soon as he was saved. I think that he's poised for a huge bounce-back game. An angry Jordan Wolf is not something that I would want to deal with. But, I mean, what were your thoughts on kind of how he worked in with the Rochester offense?
Yeah, you know, I think he's got this, like you were just kind of saying, he's got this move, or I guess a few moves, where they just generally work. They're almost like a knuckleball pitcher or something. You know, he's going to go out there and do what he does remarkably well. And yeah, I saw the same sort of thing you did. And you see that sometime, you know, maybe he'll miss the cage or something like that, and he'll just kind of be like, what just happened? You know, because everything leading up to it, you know, worked out perfectly. You know, he's like, all I got to do is step here, roll back, and, you know, clean money. I'm right at the goal. And so, you know, in occasion where, like you say, he does miss a point blank shot or something like that, or hits the pipe or something like that, it's, you know, it almost looks like that didn't seem like a possibility to him, you know?
Yeah. You can never say scare money, don't make money about Jordan Wolf. We have a full strength Rochester team now, and they started with a loss, albeit by one goal, to New York. How much does it matter? Are you, if you're game planning and you're scared to game plan against teams, is Rochester in the top three or not?
I would say, top of my head, I would say in that neighborhood, you know, like maybe the three or four, you know, definitely kind of honorable mention if they're not on the podium. But they're in this kind of a similar sort of situation to Chesapeake, maybe not so much out of necessity, but just kind of where are they going to put the guys they have too? That's actually a situation that kind of has permeated through almost every team in the league right now. You get all these guys back and you have to figure out who's going to stick around, who's going to go, you know, who's going to the practice squad and things like that. Like, you know, what's Ty Thompson's role going to be moving forward, as opposed to, say, you know, Connor Gately or, you know, Ryan McNamara or somebody like that who's new on the program? What exactly do they have that's the best version of their team? You know, if they were playing successfully up to the point where they get these new guys in, you know, John Rannigan looked really solid, I thought. I thought he really added an element that they hadn't been able to take advantage of. You know, you kind of missed that sort of downhill swim dodge and then just kind of rip a shot sort of thing that seems to kind of stretch out the field for everybody else, north and south wise. So, like I said, they're in a similar sort of situation. They've got to figure out what to do with what they have as well.
And we would be remiss to not mention Paul Rabil becoming the second player in MLL history to record his 500th point, the other being John Grant Jr. Congrats to Pauly Rabes, number 99. And also Greg Grenland winning his 2,000th faceoff in this game, which is insane. I don't even know that many people that have taken 2,000 faceoffs, and much less won them. So congrats to both those guys, and congrats to New York on snapping their three-game skid. We got to move on. Third game we're going to talk about, Florida 19, Atlanta 16. This was a wild game that I felt like Atlanta thought they won again, and then it just slipped out of their fingers, like sand through their fingers. What happened?
The defense was not big on sliding. I don't know, did you notice that it was
not big? Not big?
Not big? Not big fans of the whole sliding situation.
Man, that is a generous take, Chris Rosenthal. That is a generous take, sir.
Not interested in sliding. So they would just kind of push all their guys individually out there and say best of luck to you, and it didn't work out very well. Crazy thing. So like Atlanta's defense here, and you know, I think Atlanta's offense has, especially this past weekend, you know, you get Matthews and Stotts back in there. They have parts that are dangerous compared to any other team, just dangerous. You know what I mean? Like, they can match up with anybody's defense. But past three games, gave up 18, 18, and now 19 goals.
Yeah.
And that ain't going to cut it.
For me, they just don't make adjustments. Just the team doesn't make adjustments to, like, keep winning. And it's like, oh, this worked. We'll just keep doing this. And the teams they're playing against are like, we should try and stop that. But Atlanta doesn't work that way. They just play however they want to play. And I don't know what that's down to. But I think it's pretty obvious that they're just not changing up what they're doing in game to kind of compete with other teams. That being said, on the other side of the field, who is this Florida team? Where is my dumpster fire? I haven't used one dumpster fire emoji all year. I'm very upset.
Yeah, they are not going to be the guys who are getting that dumpster fire treatment either.
No.
Florida launch, man. Just weapons all over right now. You know, you got a goalie who's saving pretty much everything. You know, if you asked Oscar, he'd probably be like, yeah, last game was not good for me. But, I mean, he still made a ton of saves.
Right.
And so, I mean, you start with him on one end, and then you have your kind of veteran midfielders mixing in with your new midfielders, you know, Salcido dishing down there, Mariano doing his thing in the alleys. And then, of course, you get to the attack, where it's just weapon on weapon on weapon. And, I mean, they're dangerous. The dumpster fire is put out, and they're all grown up, even the rookies.
Yeah.
It's a nice team, man.
It's just a regular, you know, it's not even a dumpster anymore. They moved it out. They got a nice parking spot. It's really great. I'm happy for them, man. Like they actually, this is a team that really changed up, you know, their whole team philosophy, and is a totally new team this year, and are legit, not even threat. Like I think if I had a pencil in the playoffs, I think they're in there right now. And this is a dangerous team, man. Once the defense gets set and they figure out who they're going to start and where they're going to put, you know, Durkin and how they're going to use him and how they're going to use some of their rookies, I think they're just going to be just hell to play against. We got to keep it tight, keep it right, move on to the last game. Boston 16, Denver 9. For me, this is easily Boston's best game of the year. What about you?
I definitely agree it's their best game of the year. And I would also carry on from that and say Tyler Ferrito's best performance in cage as well.
Oh, absolutely. He was getting down on the ball a lot better. I think that was kind of his problem. He's one of those guys that uses his legs a lot in cage and cuts down angles like that with a wide stance. And I thought that, you know, some of the goals that have gotten past him are him either not attacking the right angle or getting down on the ball. And I thought he got down on the ball really well against this Denver team that, you know, just seemed to be going through the motions. I thought on the other side of the spectrum, I thought it was Denver's worst game of the year. What did you think?
Yeah, I agree. You know, offense-wise, midfield production wasn't quite there. It looked like some shots were being forced by some of their, you know, traditionally more consistent players. I really do have to say I really liked Zach Currier's game. He was all over the place, you know, ground balls and in distributing and going one-on-one. But as a whole, yeah, it just looks like they left a lot of opportunities out there.
Absolutely. Still tied for first in the league with Ohio with a 5-2 record heading into week 10. Speaking of which, the All-Star game is in about 2 weeks. And we kind of talked about this on a previous pod. The league reached out to media for the first time about their input on players that they would like to see in the All-Star game. I don't know who did it, whose idea that was, but thank you. I've been asking for that for a long time. And even though I've been asking that for a long time, I was not prepared when it happened, because it happened about 2 weeks ago. And I'm looking at my list and I have some regrets. But we're going to go through. I'm going to read my list. Chris is going to read his list. And then we'll just get it all out there. And then we'll talk about it a little bit. For face-off, I had Thomas Kelly, Brendan Fowler, Joe Nardella, and Greg Gorenlian. Who do you have?
I had Kelly, Gorenlian, Fowler, and Nardella. Same as you on a face-off.
Nice. How about midfield?
Let's see. Midfield, I had Matt Abbott, Dominic Alexander, Peter Baum, Jake Bernhardt, Connor Busick, Mike Chaninchuk, Kevin Crowley, John Haas, Miles Jones, Joe LoCascio, Paul Rabel, Tom Schreiber, Max Siebold, and Joe Walters.
Wow. I have a markedly different midfield. I had Jones, Baum, Bernhardt, Rabel, James Pinnell, who qualifies as a midfielder for me, Chaninchuk. I had Joe LoCascio before he kind of you know, went into the cryogenic freeze the last couple games. Matt McCready's, Tommy Shribes, John Hawes, Jeremy Sieverts, Connor Busick, and Kevin Crowley. Very different lineups, and we'll get to that in a second. On attack, I had Mike Bocklet, Joey Sankey, Will Manny, Jordan Wolf, Marcus Holman, Ryan Brown, Mac Gibson, and Mark Cockerton. Yes, a lot of those guys are under 5'9". Yes, I am biased towards shorter, awesome attackmen. I don't care what you think. Chris, who'd you got?
Pretty similar. Mike Bocklet, Joey Sankey, Ryan Brown, Matt Gibson, Marcus Holman, Matt Kavanaugh, Chaz Woodson, Jordan Wolf, and I had James Pinnell. I think back then when they put it out, he was running a lot more of the attack and then running out of the box and stuff like that. So he was listed as an attackman there, so that's where I tossed him.
Fair enough. Who'd you have for defense?
Defense. I had BJ Grill, Matt Bocklet, Tucker Durkin, Joe Fletcher, John Lade, Graham Hossack, Mike McMahon, Jackson Place, Matt Landis, and Scott Ratliff.
Wow. This was hard because they didn't give us an LSM option, so I almost just made an entire team of LSMs just to be like, what are you doing? But that wasn't right. Fair. I had Landis, Bernhardt, Simon, CJ Costabile, Matt McMahon, Fletcher, Mullins, Finn Sullivan as my wild card, if I'm allowed to have one, Matt Dunn and Scott Ratliff. I just, you know, I feel better about that. I feel bad about leaving Earhart and Durkin off again. Sorry, should have put you on there. My bad. But the LSM thing really had my head spinning. For goalies, I had Jack Kelly, Kyle Bornlord, John Galloway, and Austin Kapp. How about you?
That is the same for me.
All right. I mean, this – I'm not happy with my list. I want to be real. I'm not extremely excited to, like, put it out there publicly. And I guess we're not supposed to, but I kind of don't care. So, whatever. It's funny that our specialist lists were exactly the same.
Yeah.
Which I think kind of says, like, you know, there is a way to – kind of see that and get that out there and, you know, have something that's similar in terms of like specialty positions and have that be an easy thing to evaluate. But our midfield attack and defense is all over the place. And I think it's kind of, you know, a mix of your, not biases, but the guys that you look at as top tier and the guys that surprise me. So for me, this kind of list is like, it's a reward. I don't go into it looking at names on back of jerseys really all that much. I feel like guys that surprise me have an advantage. And that's why a lot of these guys are on here. You're like, that guy? Why is that guy on there? I just feel like they had a great start to the season, and we need to reward that, especially with, like, you know, NLL encroaching upon us. What do you think?
So, like, who would you say are some of the, like, surprising guys that – is that like a –
I mean, I put on Finn Sullivan, and I don't think anyone knows who he is. I put on, let's see. I mean, Lacasio, I probably shouldn't have put on, but I put him on. McCready's isn't on. Probably isn't going to be on a lot of lists. I feel really strong about Bernhardt as just a regular midi on here. If you guys saw our midseason teams last week, he was really highly ranked. I think he's been stellar for the Machine, and they needed him. I don't know how I feel about Shannon, Chuck, and Hawes. I'd probably choose one of the other. I think one of the stories is, like, you know, like Sievert, Snyder, I don't think they're, like, having great years compared to, like, years past. I think they're kind of two of the best midfielders in the league and haven't combined for huge point totals so far. So I think, you know, for me that's less impressive, even though Denver has been more impressive. But as you guys will see later, I kind of did a examination of pace and compared it to a certain cinematic genius. And that'll be out hopefully when this podcast comes out, but I'm going to tease it. What did you think? Like, what about your list? Kind of who would you replace? Who would you take off?
I mean, I'm pretty happy with my list right now. I don't know if Graham Hossack's going to make it. I think they could have done him some favors last weekend if perhaps they had given him a run against Kieran McArdle. Kind of going back to what you said about that game, they just kept with the same matchup all game against Kieran McArdle through all seven of his goals. So if he had something to offer there, he didn't really get the chance to show it. I mean, so I'm going to leave him up there, but I don't know if necessarily he's going to make it. BJ Grill, when I voted, he had had, you know, that kind of dominant run, gone against Pinnell and gone against Sankey twice, and he was just kind of shutting everybody down. You know, he's regressed, and, you know, some people have had some more success against him. I'm not really sure I regret putting him there, but, you know, I can certainly say, you know, hey, great work in the first half of this season. You know, congratulations for that aspect of it. So.
All right. With that, we're going to move on to our interview with Boston Cannons attackman, Will Manning. We're proud to welcome in Will Manning, number one on the Boston Cannons, third right now in scoring in the MLL. Will, thanks for joining us.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it. Looking forward to it.
All right. So, guys had a huge win last week, and we'll get to that. But I wanted to ask you, how has this season with the Cannons been different than years past? Because you're basically a veteran. You're a leader on this team. How is it different?
Yeah, it's every year is always different because of turnover and whatnot. But this specific year, I actually was talking about this with my roommates and a couple other guys on the team, that this is the first time I've been on the Cannons that going into All-Star break, I'm going to have a losing record, even if we win on Thursday versus Ohio, which is kind of crazy to think about. But in the grand scheme of things, it's the way to look at what Denver did last year. So for me, I guess it's looking at that and getting one game at a time and really being in a hole right now where we have to play close to a perfect game every game to win in this league. And being now 3-5, we can only afford to lose maybe one more game before kind of putting ourselves in a bad spot. So I would say just the spot that we're in before the All-Star break is the most different piece for me.
And now Kyle mentioned it a little bit there. You guys had a big win this past weekend, 16-9 out in Denver. What do you think was the key to firing up the offense? Like, what did you see that you thought you guys did especially well?
Yeah, I think it was kind of going back to the drawing board and seeing what we do well. And to be honest with you, it starts with the off the field kind of attitude and going back to having fun with each other. I think we were kind of getting on each other a little bit too much during practices and games the past couple of weeks. But I'd have to say for us, it was kind of getting Kyler Blestry back. He had a chip on his shoulder after not dressing the past 2 weeks. And the guy like Kyle Jackson coming in and really breaking down short sticks. That was what I noticed watching film is we needed to kind of beat short sticks and create offense and go to the goal harder. And then obviously having Sergio back and starting us off with the first goal of the game was pretty awesome. So I think it was just a fast start that we kind of ran with. And then on a defensive end, having Mitch back was such a game changer, and Tyler having 20 saves was a pretty unique experience.
So I know you had a pretty successful run at Wagner when you were there. And obviously with the Utah news coming out, how has your experience coaching at Utah this past season kind of shaped your outlook on the game and maybe even you as a player now in the MLL?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I think that's something that has started when I was at Wagner and just falling more in love with the game and teaching and spreading the game and approaching it the right way. And for Utah, it's been a little different than at Wagner, obviously, because I went from a Division I team to a club team and coaching alongside Marcus and Adam and obviously Brian Holman. They're human beings, my best friends that I've ever had. And those guys push me to the limits, both on and off the field as a coach and as a player every single day. So for me, having the facilities at school and having the guys that we had on the Utah team who are technically quote unquote club lacrosse players who dedicated a full school year, like a Division I lacrosse player this past year, with workouts and extra film work and extra work after practice and doing individual sessions. I don't think there's many club teams that do that. And those guys really bought into what we're trying to do and approach this like a Division I team and program like it was going to be. And now with the announcement, it's all the dreams come true. And that's kind of the attitude that we're going to look for moving forward with our team, is that there's never any excuses, and follow the pillars of Utah lacrosse that Coach Holman always brings up, and being that good person both on and off the field. And you'll come in as a good lacrosse player, maybe leave as a great one, but you're also going to leave as a great young man and have a great job and be a good person leaving the school. So I think that's kind of the attitude I've had and what I bring to the table now as a young professional lacrosse player and just in the business world, is just trying to be the best person I can and build relationships as much as I can and as fast as I can. So I think it's been a tremendous experience.
And with that big Utah announcement that just recently came out, what's the past week or so been like for you personally, since that news was officially made public?
Yeah, it's been great. And look, I was fortunate enough, right when the announcement happened on Friday, I had a flight out at 2 p.m. going to Denver. I was going to recruit at the Denver shootout, and the responses and the reactions I got when I was there with my Utah shirt on and Utah hat was really special. Everyone congratulating me and our staff and our team and program, and it felt very special. I mean, we had to recruit all fall and all winter. And at that point, the question was, when's it happening? Is it happening? And we kind of had to just slow play it. And again, we knew it was going to happen at some point, but with the staff we have and how honest we are, it was just a matter of time. And this past weekend was really, really special because obviously I played on Saturday night and we won, and it was one of our better games. And I can go into the recruiting all day Sunday at the Denver shootout with a smile on my face and everyone again congratulating us and thanking us for what we've done with the sport. And I got to see a bunch of our guys that we have committed playing and meet their parents and tailgate with them a little bit, which is fun. And so for me, that was the fun part. And now the dirty work with having 250 emails in 2.5 days is pretty insane. So I'm halfway through those right now and trying to get through those before my game in Boston on Thursday. So it's been hectic, but obviously it's a very unique and cool experience and one of the bigger announcements in college lacrosse history.
So you kind of touched on it earlier, Boston's kind of, it has a losing record right now. What do you guys need to do in the coming weeks to make the playoffs?
Yeah, I think it all, again, going back to how we've been approaching this season is one game at a time and not even looking past this, is beating Ohio on Thursday. Because for us, there's a 2.5 week span where we don't have a game now going into All-Star break and USA tryouts, and we have a bye on top of that. So getting this win on Thursday would be huge, obviously, because they beat us in overtime 2 weeks ago, and we were down four or five goals with 5 minutes to go, and we tied it up, and we actually had the lead with a minute and a half, and then Tommy Shribe scored one with 20 seconds left, and then we lost in overtime. So there's a bitter taste in the mouth, and getting this game is the next step, because there's a 2.5 week span where guys can kind of look at themselves in the mirror and take the back seat for a week or so and get some rest and recovery before the second half of this stretch of the season. And then again, it's one play, one game at a time, and we have to win. Again, like I said, I think we can only afford to lose one more game to even be playoff eligible. So I think it starts on Wednesday night, getting in on time and being ready for practice, and then the game on Thursday versus a very strong and first place Ohio team.
All right, we'll try to switch it up here for the final four. First of all, who is the greatest movie superhero?
Greatest movie superhero. I'm going to go with Spider-Man.
So now when you say Spider-Man, Are you – you got Spider-Man Homecoming coming up. Are you excited about Teenage Spider-Man Marvel Comic Universe kind of joining up with Iron Man?
To be honest with you, I've never seen Iron Man, so I am not that excited, but I should probably go see that movie.
It is on track to make a lot of money. But what stick are you currently using? Do you string your own, or do you have a guy?
I currently use a STX Surgeon 700 head and STX Surgeon shaft. I do not string my own sticks. I am terrible at it. And my man, shout out to Sean Rooney at Lacrosse Unlimited. He's been stringing my sticks since seventh grade. And I think Tommy Shribes and Marcus Holman can attest to this, that he strings a really good stick however you need it, and he's done in 5 minutes. And obviously they do the dies and whatever you need as well. I'm pretty straightforward with that stuff, kind of rocking the all black Mamba stick this year. So I got to give a shout out to Sean Rooney because he's been doing it 3 years for me.
Nice. What is the last song you listened to?
Last song I listened to was worked out about an hour ago. It was 679 by Fetty Wap.
Very nice.
I was like, Chris, comments? Do you have comments?
No, that is my lone comment. Very nice.
All right. Last one that we ask everybody, what is your order at Chipotle/favorite burrito place?
Yeah, Chipotle is my favorite burrito place, and I do like getting a burrito, so I'll go burrito. I'll go brown rice, a little bit of pinto beans, veggies, steak, pico, sour cream, cheese, guac, lettuce. Get that thing wrapped up. And then Marcus actually introduced this to me, is the you get a side of the salad dressing, and then you could pour a little bit of that on each bite, and it's quite the taste. So that's been my order, and I actually got it yesterday too, so that's pretty funny.
That's solid. Speaking of Holman, he just hit us up on Twitter and wants to know how many right-handed points you have this year.
I just saw that as well. So me and him have a competition who has more off-handed points this year, and I think I got three or four this year. We have a tally at home. I don't remember how many he has, but I think we're pretty close.
All right. Awesome. Well, everybody, thanks for Will Manny for coming out. Good luck this week. It's a home game against Ohio, correct?
Yes, sir.
Thursday night game is the first one.
Yeah, let's this go. Is the first one for us. And yeah, it's actually nice because we can get the weekend kind of quote-unquote off, but I have to go recruiting anyway, so it's all good. But got to get this one on Thursday. I'm looking forward to being back at home in front of the Cannons fans.
All right. Well, thank you for joining us on a Tuesday night. This will go up tomorrow, Wednesday. And, you know, good luck.
Thanks, guys. Kyle and Chris, I appreciate it. It's been awesome, and I hope you guys have a good night, man.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Will. All right. Great job by Will there. I kind of screwed up the end there, but, you know, I got one of those moments where your, like, brain stops working and you're like, outro. I didn't write it down. Oh, no. Okay. But, hey, here we are. We are going into our next segment, one of our favorites, a non-MLL segment. Chris explains music. Chris Rosenthal, this is a very important question. We touched on it briefly in the pre-pod, but I feel like we need to talk about it more. What is the best Kanye West album and why?
The best Kanye West album is Late Registration.
Okay. Why?
And why is, despite having skits, which I feel like skits age super poorly in rap albums.
Unless it's Wu-Tang. Traditionally,
right, yeah. Traditionally speaking, they're kind of like, it's kind of like, you know, open up an avocado or something like that. It's like you got an hour and then you're going to be like, why is this even there? So the skits are not that great, but they're not even bad for rap skits. So, like, you can still listen to them and they're okay because they keep things moving. Song for song, I just feel like it's one of his best works, like, just, like, average song-wise, you know what I mean? maybe like the worst late registration song might be worse than, say, the worst on College Dropout. But I think there's more highs on the late registration album. And I think there's better music, like the best music, in my opinion, and production and everything like that, in my opinion, is late registration.
I have a controversial opinion on this, and I'm ready for you to tear me apart, and I'm ready for the listeners to shut the podcast off. Let me tell you why it's 808s. Let me just have like 2 minutes of your time. The best Kanye West album is 808s and Heartbreak because Kanye basically invented EDM. And I hate EDM. I do. I hate it. Get off my lawn. I have a shotgun. I will shoot you if you're a DJ. Okay? Go away. I hate it. It's not music to me. It's like robots. I don't care. It's like binary code turned into musical notes. I don't like it. I have exceptions. There are exceptions, but I generally don't like it. And what Kanye did with 808s is give you a starting point for what EDM could be with good lyrics, a drum machine, and a point. And listen, it's full of bad songs. Don't get me wrong. I just think the reach, even though it exceeded the grasp, was groundbreaking, inspirational, and amazing. Speaking of amazing, that is the best song on the album. And not just because Young Jeezy turns a verb into a noun by asking for an applause. Not applause, an applause. He personifies it. He just wants an applause. Right. Unbelievable. It's a great, has one of the best kind of like droning lyrical kind of like crescendos in his songs. I just love that song. When I coached, I made my players walk out to it and they were like, what is this old stupid Kanye song? It's like, shut up, get in line, let's go. So sorry, it's my little diatribe. Feel free to roast me on Twitter. I expect it. I welcome it. We're going to move on to our Lax Draft picks of the week. I got to say, some of my star guys been letting me down. Lineup guys been letting me down. Pick one this week. You can select Peter Baum, Mike Bocklet, John Haas, Joey Sankey, Joe Walters, or Jordan Wolf. That is, if I may say, a murderer's row of goal scorers and point gatherers. The second draft pick is a long poll. You can pick Jesse Bernhardt, Matt Bocklet, Michael Earhart, or Scott Radcliffe. I feel like that pick just doesn't change. It's just like they slot in like Bernhardt or CJ Costabile there just for some variety. And the third pick, you have to pick a goalie. Kyle Bornler for the Ohio Machine. Adam Gittleman for Atlanta. Who is he starting? We don't even know. Jack Kelly for Denver. Brian Fisk for Chesapeake. Should he be starting? Is he starting? I don't even know. So I'm going to say don't pick either one of those guys. But my final lineup, Jordan Wolf, Scott Radcliffe, because I roll with Radcliffe. I feel as if he will bounce back. He will get a goal this week. And Jack Kelly as my goalie. Who you got?
I am also going with Wolf and Kelly, but I am switching off from Radcliffe and picking up Matt Bocklet. I think I've kind of been alternating with Radcliffe. I think I've had him on, you know, 1 week and then off the next week.
Yeah.
And maintaining my Bocklets. I'm going to go with at least one Bocklet in my lineup for the time being. So putting Matt in there because I had Mike last week, dropping Mike off this week, picking up Wolf, and picking up Matt Bocklet on the list there.
What about your goalie?
A goalie, I will take Jack Kelly as well.
Yeah, he's got the best matchup this week, I feel. You won last week, right?
I did, as a matter of fact. Yes.
You didn't tie anyone.
No. You know, I tied for first place 2 weeks ago, and I was like, enough of that. And then this week, I just said, I'll just do it by myself. And so, yes, I went first place. Thank you again.
All right. He's starting to put a run together, folks. You should listen to him. All right. We are moving into our final segment, the Twitter Game of the Week. this Saturday, June 24th, 7 p.m., Ohio versus Chesapeake. Even though Ohio is playing earlier in the week against Boston. What are your thoughts right off the bat?
Well, it seems like some crazy scheduling. I don't know. They have three games in like an eight-day period or something nuts like that. Now, if you were asking what are my thoughts on the actual game, I think it does start off with the face-off situation because Ben Williams has been doing well, had a really, really strong debut, and then, you know, pretty solid second game, and was contributing in the offense too. You know, it's kind of been a real big sort of bonus for a lot of these teams. You can get somebody who's also distributing, you know, setting up some goals or assists as well. So Ben Williams has been rolling pretty well for them. Ohio's had some difficulty. They had Greg Biskulgin. Is he going to be back this week, or are they going with a replacement? I'm not really sure. He's had a couple weeks that were very, very, very bad. So I'm not sure if they're looking elsewhere. I'm not sure their move they're going to make for that one, but they're going to have to decide something quick because Williams has shown that he can play in this league.
But Chris, they're playing at the Fortress. Should help, right?
You'd think so. I mean, they won. I think they won last time they were there. But I mean, any place you can play where you get a sound effect, I think you're good for at least two or three bonus goals off of that.
Absolutely. My thoughts on the faceoff are the first thing to come to mind. Looking at these two teams, my other question on the other side of the ball there is, who's Chesapeake going to start an attack? Who do they start at midfield? Like, what are they even doing? I feel like we didn't touch on this earlier when we went through the recap, but one of the things that you have to take into account with the rotating roster is other teams can't game plan for them. That's definitely an advantage in the MLL, but I still feel like you have to, you know, put forth a consistent effort to have a game plan. And the fact that it changes every week due to personnel is troublesome. What do you think about that kind of thought process?
Yeah, I definitely agree. Like you said, it is sort of a bonus that other teams don't know what to expect. But I think that also hinders Chesapeake. You know, like if Matt Donowski's just kind of posted up on that righty spot, but he doesn't know who he's going to be playing with. You know, or, you know, is he like, so is Josh Byrne lining across from him? Is Evans going to be back over there? Is Lyle Thompson going to be the guy over there? And, you know, if they get, you know, a walkthrough before they suit up and play, they're going to be at a distinct disadvantage as well heading into this game. You know, I don't know what they're going to do at attack or at midfield. Is Colin Heacock a midfielder or not? I thought he was going to be. I don't know what they're going to do.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and we didn't even talk about Jake Fakara winning MLL Rookie of the Week with a hat trick in his debut. So, I mean, it's a good, again, you said this, it's a good problem to have, but it's a problem, especially against a team like Ohio, who is, at this point, Ohio has all their guys. You know, we haven't seen them debut too many rookies, but I feel like this squad, the rookies are just going to be whipped cream and a cherry on top of the giant Sunday that is Ohio. You know, and when you go into the Fortress, you just have to be ready to take a beating from that defense, because the defense is actually Ohio's most underrated aspect of the team, of their team, and one of the reasons they have won games. Even though, you know, Will talked about it earlier, they scored, you know, the Cannons scored 4 or 5 goals on them with 5 minutes left, and I don't think Ohio had dealt with that all season. And then it happens, and they pull out a victory in overtime, and I feel like that game was probably bigger for Ohio than people realize, because that's a real confidence builder. I mean, that on top of you add Kyle Harrison back and he's seamless, you know, dusts the guy, makes him fall down on like his first shift. So, you know, Ohio's a tough team to beat. Their real Achilles heel is that faceoff though. And if Ben Williams could like conceivably win like over 20 faceoffs in this game and give Chesapeake a huge advantage, I think the problem with Chesapeake is like, they just need to get their turnovers down. Miles Jones leads the league in turnovers. And that's not good, because he's their initiator. He's one of their best players. That's a guy that needs to stop running into guys, knocking them over and taking a shot, maybe, and dodging a little bit more off the catch, kind of working himself into the offense, and taking a good run, setting up two guys up top to get their alley dodges in. But, you know, yeah, any other aspects of this game that we're overlooking here or we've missed?
Well, kind of about the Miles Jones situation you just mentioned, they're just trying to think about the matchups they're going to draw for this game. And so, you know, Ohio, a lot of times they're pretty comfortable sending Dominique Alexander out on anybody. You know, like they like throwing him against Rabel a lot, like that size matchup. Do you think that's going to be the matchup here, or do you think they're going to stick with maybe Karolunas on Jones, or they're going to have just Alexander and Jones just running into each other like freight trains?
They better not have Karolunas on Jones. That's not good. That's going to be trail check defense just all day, and not even because of Jones's speed, but I don't. Karolunas can't get, you know, enough body to move him. He's a monster. He's a big dude. You need somebody that matches up with that, and they have no shortage of that. I wouldn't be surprised if they spoked over one of their larger poles, like McMahon, to kind of take that matchup and take it away from them and throw Alexander on any of the rookies. Because I think one of the things the rookies aren't used to is their eyes probably light up when they see a short stick, but Dominique Alexander especially is not your average short stick. And that's going to be a painful matchup for you, even if you do score. So I think that as long as Chesapeake kind of spreads their offense out and forces, you know, Ohio to make the matchups, then they're going to be all right. But I feel like Chesapeake isn't ready to do that. And Ohio's really going to dictate, you know, what they do on offense by where they put which defender. And that could really severely if a guy is put on the wrong guy, like if you put the wrong guy on Danowski, he's going to blow up for 6 points. That's Matt Danowski in the MLO, folks. You put the wrong guy on him and he will destroy him. You put the right guy on him and he won't do much. So I think Ohio has to be very careful about who they put on whom in this game. And likewise, Chesapeake really needs to play tighter defense and stop chucking the ball away. You know, they need to improve on their clears. They need to improve on attacking quickly instead of throwing the ball away quickly early in the shot clock. And this is the game to do that. I don't know how successful you're going to be against Ohio, but I do think Chesapeake's going to have the lion's share of the possession due to their, you know, face-off advantage.
Yeah, it's been definitely interesting for them to, you know, push the button and go for Ben Williams there. But it's worked out very well. You know, I thought heading into the season he was going to be a little banged up, maybe have to sit out a few weeks or something, but he hit the ground running. He's been doing very well.
No, I mean, he's played better in the MLL than he played in the NCAA. Let's be real. That's a 100% fact. All right, that's going to do it for our Week 10 MLL podcast. We're trying to keep these a little shorter, guys. I know we're running long. We want to get you in, get you out, get you as much information as we can give you in the time allotted, and hopefully you guys had a little fun. Enjoyed it. Come interact with us on Twitter. You can find me there at @TheKyleDevitt. Chris?
@ChrisRosie22.
And that'll do it. Thanks for listening, guys. Talk to you later. X gon' give it to you. Wait for you to get it on your own. X gon' deliver to you. Knock, knock, open up the door, it's real. With the nonstop pop out from stainless steel. Go hard getting busy with it. But I got such a good heart that I make the mother...